Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 30, and it's Patriots Week. And we'll have Patriots beat writer Ben Volen of the Boston Globe join us in about 35 minutes or so. But Dave, interesting day yesterday with Mike Tomlin. And as is sometimes the case, and I think it's probably not just coincidence, Mike was more expansive yesterday, as he tends to be a bit after a loss. I thought there were a lot of interesting things in the Q&A, but obviously the front and center is the injury report, and Mike immediately ruled out not just Ben Roethlisberger, but Cam Hayward for this game coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, and boy, your two captains, right? Your two the two guys that probably you can't afford to lose the most in Roethlisberger and Cameron Hayward. I think everybody kind of saw this coming with both these guys, really, you know, especially with Roethlisberger after he had to have the meniscus repaired Monday morning. Now the question with him is, how long will Roethlisberger be out? Melanie, of course, our kind of site resident expert when it comes to these type of medical things, you know, projects him only missing the one game and possibly being back by the time the Ravens game rolls around. Mike Tomlin refused to give a timetable with Roethlisberger on Tuesday. However, Art Rooney II was quoted by the USA Today as saying, you know, maybe 2 to 3 weeks is a projected time frame with him. You move on to Wednesday morning. You have a report by Chris Mortensen saying that Roethlisberger could be out 4 to 6 weeks. And then, of course, you had Ron Cook talk to Roethlisberger, I think, yesterday. And Roethlisberger said because of, you know, the past injury that Roethlisberger had in his left knee, talking about the one he suffered last year about St. Louis or against the St. Louis or then St. Louis Rams, but still gets tough saying that. But that, you know, he could be a little bit longer than a couple weeks. Now, you know, we'll see. The best thing about it is the Steelers play this team called bye next week, and boy, they sure will need it. And there's a lot of other guys we'll be watching throughout the week too, in addition to, well, we already know the status of Roethlisberger and Cam Hayward, but a lot of guys that sound questionable at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the 4 to 6 week thing, if you're just looking at the schedule, it's, you know, the Pats and the bye, and then at Baltimore, Dallas at home, at Cleveland, at Indy. It's not the most daunting schedule, but, you know, the Steelers are sitting here at 4-2 and potentially 4-3 if they don't get a win this week against the Pats, which obviously they're not going to be favored going into this game. And, you know, all of a sudden a conversation about, you know, AFC playoff game at home versus making the playoffs. The tenor is very different. And the injury list continues to be relatively long, as the other guy ruled out was Cody Wallace, and with arthroscopic surgery on his knee 2 weeks ago. Okay, I would assume that Cody Wallace would be ready to go after the bye. And I guess what we're going to be thinking about after the bye is Ladarius Green going to be a guy who is able to come back? And are the Steelers going to be able to get, and I think it's probably pretty straightforward now, Bud Dupree back and be able to activate him on the designated to return guy and have him contribute down the stretch? Dave, the rest of the injury list is all the guys everybody knows about. And so, as Mike said, we'll see where practice takes us, and today will be the day that will be the guide. I'm sure Ryan Shazier will come in again and be limited, I would think, as he was a little bit last week. None of the other guys really practiced last week. They weren't even listed as limited. So I don't expect any of them to be able to go, and that includes Marcus Wheaton, Marcus Gilbert. Who am I forgetting? There are a couple other guys on that list, but I don't expect to see a lot of a lot of reinforcements for the Steelers this week. But the flip side of that being, hopefully when you get out of the bye, maybe you'll have a team that's a lot closer to being able to field a full complement of players and have their guys ready to go. Sammy Coates was not listed by Mike at any point, and I forgot to ask him what his status was. And so I would assume Sammy Coates is a go, although, you know, he was a go last week, and while targeted a couple times, really no role in that game.
Yeah, to round this thing out, Marcus Wheaton with a shoulder, Ryan Shazier, of course, with a knee, Shamarco Thomas groin, Marcus Gilbert ankle, the kind of the new or refreshed names on the list, Mike Mitchell knee, running back D'Angelo Williams knee, safety Robert Golden foot. I would be willing to bet that Mitchell, D'Angelo Williams, and Robert Golden are all fine come game time. I'm going to differ with you on your opinion of Marcus Gilbert, David, and here's the reason. I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on here and read a little bit into the transaction that the Steelers made on Tuesday. They had signed Brian Mahalik off of the Detroit Lions practice squad to the 53-man roster, and in order to make room for him, they had to waive Matt Filer. Now, Matt Filer has since circled back and was signed to the practice squad on Wednesday morning. To me, you're talking about a guy at Brian Mahalik on your 53-man roster who has not been with the team since week one of the preseason when he went down injured. Yes, he might know a little bit of what was going on, but this offense you would think has probably changed. I guess, long story short, David, I kind of find it hard to believe that Brian Mahalik would be your backup swing tackle for the game against the Patriots behind Chris Hubbard and Alejandro Villanueva. So because of that, and because of maybe a kind of a optimistic tweet that Marcus Gilbert sent out kind of a few days ago, I'm going to guess that we'll see Marcus Gilbert back in this lineup as a starter this week.
Well, that'd be good when it comes to Mahalik or Filer. I think you're kind of flipping coins as to, you know, thinking that one's going to be a big improvement or a big downgrade over the other two guys who've never played. So I hope the logic maybe makes some sense. So I hope you're right. And we'll see how that goes. And we've seen Gilbert deal with this injury before. So maybe there is that.
Ladarius Green, forgot to update him as well too. And the update is there is no update. Mike Thomas, I don't, what does Mike gain by not? You know he has to know. He said he had to talk to the doctors, yada yada, and all like that. Just tell us if he's going to practice or not this week. I mean, it's not a state secret here. I don't believe, but we're going to sit here guessing the rest of the afternoon until somebody reports that Ladarius Green was out there resuming practicing again. And once that does happen, the Steelers will have 21 days to activate him back to the 53-man roster. My view on him, David, is even if Ladarius Green practices fully all 3 days this week, personally, I'll be shocked if he plays against the Patriots. You know, I just think he probably needs to get back in football shape. He needs to show that he has this playbook and get on the same page with these other guys. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm right. But we just don't know yet whether or not he's going to resume practicing or start practicing on Wednesday. And evidently, that's a big state secret.
Yeah, I would assume he will start practicing, and like you, I don't know that he'll be on the active roster. I think you want to get him all the practice you can, so you get it as soon as he's physically able. Assuming he is physically able, let's get him in there, start working with him, have the couple practices during the bye week, get those, and maybe he's an effective guy to join the roster come the Cleveland week. All right, where to go with what Mike said? A lot of things. One, I think the maybe most notable, just in terms of tipping his hand, Mike said at the press conference that, you know, can't get in a shootout with these guys, talking about the Patriots offense. And I'm sure everybody agrees with that. It's hard to envision this offense with Landry Jones at the helm putting up 31 points against the Patriots. And the Patriots under Brady have done just that in the 30s. They're going to be tough to slow down. So Mike might have to actually stick to his word here, as they've gotten away from the ground game and the two losses on the road to the Eagles and the Dolphins, and really run Le'Veon Bell a lot in this game, and just rely on a little bit of play action from Landry Jones, and hope the time of possession swings the other way from what it did in Miami, and the Steelers hold the ball for 33, 34, 35 minutes and keep this game in the 20s for both teams, because if they're going to have a chance, that's probably what it's going to take, Dave. And so we don't often hear Mike talk about things like that, and rightly so with Ben, because you don't have to, but he did yesterday.
Yeah, he talked about how his run defense wore down against the Dolphins, and that was pretty evident, you know, as well, especially in the second half. Jay Ajayi, what, he only had like 51 yards. I thought it was funny that Thomas said, well, we didn't really give up big plays early, but Ajayi, his first two runs were like 10 and 12 yards.
So, yeah, right out of the chute. They had 15 plays of 10 or more. I think I tweeted this out yesterday. I think it was 15 plays of 10 or more yards.
Yeah, what did I write? 11 runs of 10 or more yards, and they came into the game only allowing 8 runs of 10 or more yards. So I guess Mike was pretty happy that they only allowed Ajayi to have 51 yards rushing in the first half. And but, boy, they certainly did wear him down in the second half. And as I wrote yesterday, dissecting what Ryan Tannehill did, boy, did the ball was coming. It's no secret what the West Coast offense is. Some teams execute it better than others, and it seems like for the most part, the Steelers defense tends to aid teams that run that by, you know, playing a little bit of cover three, playing those corners off. And Tannehill was sharp with those short passes. He only threw 3 balls past 15 yards, past the line of scrimmage. And 2 of those were plays that Mike Tomlin said really were defensible. And you know what, Mike? You're right. Artie Burns in cover 3 on one of those didn't carry the outside guy in the switch and release routes there. And you got to trust your inside guy there to take the middle third of the field, and Artie Burns didn't. It resulted in a big play and ultimately points. And then, as we talked about already on, you know, the other day as well, I don't know what William Gay thought he saw or what have you on the pass to the tight end. Kind of on, really was a broken play. You know, the Tannehill had broken containment. There's no reason for a play like that to go over your head, and especially with a guy like William Gay. And Mike Tomlin made sure to point that out as well. Mike Tomlin pointed out the dropped interception by William Gay, and we talked about that the other day as well too. How many times have the Steelers, you know, defensive backs, who by the way have 0 interceptions this year, had them, you know, in and out, you know, pulled a Knight Taylor, if you will. So I think Mike did us justice by the comments that he made, but you know, now how do you go about fixing these things?
Yeah, he did. He was I wouldn't say he threw anybody under the bus, but he was more specific about some things than he usually is. And defensively, what are you going to say? I mean, look, here's the thing about this defense is all year long, starting from day one of training camp, they've talked about trying to get to the quarterback with 4. They haven't been able to do it. Just flat out haven't been able to do it. And at the same time, they've gone kind of back to the very same philosophy that they had under Dick LeBeau, that was predicated on 3 things: stop the run, tackle the catch, and don't allow the big play. And to some level, coming into last week, that's what they were able to do, some degree of that. Obviously, it didn't work against the Eagles. But they weren't giving up plays over the top. On Sunday, you had the worst of all worlds, both worlds, every world, whatever. They couldn't get to the passer at all. And if you're gonna bring 3 or 4, which is most of the season, that's what the Steelers have done, then you have to be able to do the other things. If you're gonna do that, then you better be able to stop the run, and you better not give up big plays. And in this game, they gave up 4 plays of 33 yards or more, and they had 2 more plays that were 35 and 37, because they were 22, 20, the 20-yard run and a 22-yard pass play, or vice versa, can't remember exactly, And both plays on the back of it, Mike Mitchell got a 15-yard penalty. So they became 35 and 37-yard gain. So they had 30, they had six plays in that game where the ball ended up 33 or more yards past the line of scrimmage. Only one was a touchdown. So these were, you know, big field, as Mike said yesterday, field flipping plays. This is a disaster. I mean, you're not going to beat anybody. You're not going to beat the local high school team if you're giving up plays like that. That's, you know, six over 33. We're talking, you know, a minimum of 200 yards right there on six plays, which is a disaster. And the defense was a disaster on Sunday. I mean, the offense was bad, and if Ben hadn't gotten hurt, I'm not sure they would win that game anyway. But the defense was horrific.
Yeah, and you let a guy like Tannehill convert on third down against you as well too. If you're going to play that style of defense, you got to get the early stop on the early down. You've got to put teams in must pass situations. And even so, now you saw Tannehill, I think, take the, instead of trying to get a big chunk of it back on second down, he was just glad to take 3 or 4 yards there. This pass rush is just horrible. There's no other way to put it. I mean, whether it's 3, 4, 5, or even the occasional 6, they're not getting home. And you asked Mike Tomlin about that. I believe it was you that asked that and said, is this still an issue of players winning their one-on-one battles? He says, yes. I mean, they're not winning those. They're not winning those. They don't have the personnel to effectively rush the passer. And I mean, the outside linebackers had 15 total sacks last year, David. We talked about this the other day. Are they even going to reach that number this year? I mean, is Cam Hayward once again going to lead his team in sacks? Would they hit 40-something last year? And it's unbelievable that they did. They're going to have to get some big leads in games this year if they're going to start rolling up those kind of numbers, because I just don't see it. This defense, it's not good.
No, it's not good. And look, even though
a couple games there held them to 16 points or under, we can agree that Kirk Cousins wasn't sharp in that first game, right? I mean, he missed.
He wasn't, and Dalton wasn't in the Bengals game. I mean, you know, you can, it might have been the weather or whatever it was, but neither quarterback was good in that game.
They jumped on the Chiefs. I mean, Alex Smith is not a guy that's going to bring you back generally from 20-something points down. So that was good defense by the Steelers' offense in that game against against the Chiefs. Against the Jets,
they hit the Jets. They got some pressure on Fitzpatrick. I'll give them that, and they had some sacks. But again, the offense. Look, the second half against the Jets, that's the form, you know, without Cam Hayward, they played really well. Now they had a lead. I got it. But, you know, they did things well in that half, and that's kind of that is the singular half of the season, probably. You can point to 100 yards of total offense, no points, did what they needed to do, and then they go on the road. And I mean, this was bad. And you're right, from the first plays. I mean, the first couple plays, you know, they get those big yards on the runs, and Mitchell gets another, you know, personal foul or unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, and it was it wasn't good. But I'll just go back to what I said on Monday. It's hard to imagine that. Well, the Steelers outside linebacker group has got to be as poor a position group as there is in the league. I mean, it's just they're not doing the job, and they couldn't set the edge in the run game this past week. None of them are, and that's, you know, we keep. I don't want to say we're making excuses for Jarvis Jones. We try to evaluate everybody's play each week on the merits of his play. And Jarvis Jones has done some good things, and he has been consistently pretty good against the run. They weren't good against the run, and when you're not getting hurries, you're not getting pressures, you're not getting sacks. That's what you're there for. Come on, let's be honest about this defense. They want to do it with four guys, and that means the outside linebackers have to do it, and they haven't done it for a couple of years now.
Yeah, boy, I mean, look, this is a team that I predicted to win a Super Bowl. I guess I fell too much in love with what the offense could do, and using that as maybe the offense plays a great defense. They're going to continue when and if Roethlisberger gets back. There's going to be times where this offense scores 30, 40 points again, and that will be games that the Steelers defense probably only allows 16, 17, 18 points. It just seems like it's all or nothing. Everything's predicated on what this offense does. And if they have a stinker, like they obviously did against Miami, then, you know, they're kind of hung out to dry. And realistically, if you look back at that game against the Bengals, that thing could have gone either way, right? I mean, what happens at the end there if that fumble isn't ruled a fumble, you know? A lot of what ifs. I understand that you can do that every game. Go down, circle. What if, you know, these two or three plays worked out this way? But man, I'm just so aggravated about this defense, Dave, because they got a good enough offense and have had a good enough offense really for the last couple of years. But it's the same thing going on, I think, 4 years with this defense now. Is You got to be able to pressure the.
They're not making plays.
You know, they're not making plays.
Hey, Steeler fans, mortgage rates are at all-time lows these days, and if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxand from First Advantage Mortgage. Craig's a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. He's a nationally recognized lender, and he'd love the opportunity to help out our listeners. You can call Craig Oxand today at 855-961-7763. That's a new number. Make note of it, 855-961-7763. Or you can just apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. It's company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right, so we'll stop feeling sorry for ourselves about the defense. They're not very good right now.
Should I take the gun out of my mouth?
Yeah. Now, what about the – and this is, you know, this is going into Patriots week, and this is, like, you know, obviously worst possible time and scenario. What about the offense? They weren't all that good either. And Dave, I'm going to throw this out there, and I'm going to get pillared for this. Ben's numbers at home have been great. But Ben's accuracy this year, to me, seems a bit off. And you go back to the game, first game, Redskins. I didn't think he was great in terms of accuracy. The Bengals game, he was bad. The Eagles game, bad. The Jets game, again, I don't, you know, the numbers in the Jets and the Chiefs game looked great. And he made some great throws in those games. I don't want to I'm not suggesting he's been bad, but accuracy in both those games, a bit off. And then in the Dolphins game, for sure, even before the injury. And maybe the injury was, you know, maybe it was a culmination of things, and that knee, there was stuff going on before, you know, that one play that maybe triggered it finally. But have you felt the same way looking back, that Ben's accuracy this year doesn't seem to be what we've seen in the past?
Well, I mean, I think he's been hit or miss. I mean, I think he's had three, you know, accurate games. I thought he was personally, David, I thought he was sharp against the Redskins. I thought he was sharp against the Chiefs, and I thought he was sharp-ish against the Jets. Now, obviously, the games against Cincinnati, Philadelphia, I don't know what you want to blame that on, the weather or what. 51.4% of his passes, I believe, completed in that. When he doesn't complete, you know, 56% of his passes, probably, I wonder what the stat is on that, how many times the Steelers lose. But, you know, you obviously don't want to have him throwing much more than, you know, 36, 37 times a game if you can help it. The offense needs to run more through Le'Veon than it does Ben Roethlisberger. If you run the football, it's going to make Ben Roethlisberger even that much more better. And, you know, I think Alex Cazzori, in a video he put up this morning, will show you some ways that really Todd Haley or, you know, most of the play calling wasn't great against Miami. You have playmakers on this team. They're named Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown. all those guys have got to be kind of used in unison in various forms of fashion in order for them to win. And even as we talked about the other day, and Mike Tomlin made a hint or really talked about this, they lost their character, lost their offensive character or identity in that game against the Dolphins. And when you go and look at the second half there, yes, they ran Le'Veon Bell on that first series of the second half, which, by the way, as we notated, it didn't begin until, what, nine-something minutes of the third quarter there. It had been nice to had the defense, you know, been able to got off the field and get Ben the ball back so he's not standing there on the sideline with that knee. But really outside of those three or four runs that the offense had, Roethlisberger was just winging the football the rest of the way. And, I understand it was 23-8 entering what the fourth quarter, but that's plenty of time for the Steelers to mount a couple of drives there, and they really did. But you would like to see a little bit more balance there. I thought they could have ran the football a little bit more to keep the Dolphins defense on their heels, and not only that, keep their own defense off the field a little bit longer on top of that. But I think this offense, especially, I mean, God knows, who knows how, you know, with how long Roethlisberger is going to be out, but it's got to run through Le'Veon Bell now. And when Ben gets back, I mean, he's probably not going to be 100%. On top of it, feed Le'Veon Bell and go from there.
No doubt that's going to be the tactic. And, you know, again, just kind of listening to Mike talk about things, I asked him what the problem was with the run defense, and said, you know, is it they just spread you out and ran the ball against the nickel? And I think that's some of it. And at the other side, you know, we saw the other team line up in the wide nine, and the Steelers didn't maybe attack that as much with the run as they should have. I mean, the Steelers, they ran the ball effectively. The numbers look good. I mean, yeah, you have a 60-yard end around in there with Darius Heyward-Bey, but, you know, Le'Veon averaged over 5 yards a carry. They got away from it. Ben, you know, as we talked about, Ben wasn't that good in that game. So this is going to force them to have an identity. And look, I don't have any problem with their identity being throwing the football when everybody's healthy. If you had all the guys that you'd like to have, which hasn't happened yet this year. You haven't had Ladarius Green. Wheaton's missed a bunch of games. You know, Coates is down dinged up. But, you know, Eli Rogers has missed a bunch of games. So they haven't had their offensive full complement of offensive players. Le'Veon Bell missed the first two games. So, but now your hand is forced, and it's going to be Le'Veon Bell, and they're going to have to run, you know, play action off that and do some things. And look, just take the Dallas Cowboy model. You don't have Ezekiel Elliott, but you got a guy who's a different back and maybe a better back, and the offensive line maybe isn't quite as good as the Cowboys' offensive line, but you got a good offensive line. So now go out and show it, and that's what it's going to take. And that's how look, it's not impossible to win this game. The impossible thing may be on the defensive side of things to win this game. But, you know, they can put up 24 points in this game if they're able to kind of put in a game plan that's effective and Landry Jones is, you know, shows he's capable of throwing the ball, which I think we're all curious to see. And, boy, Dave, is there ever going to be more of an audition for a contract than Landry Jones is going to get, you know, this week and maybe the next couple of weeks? We talk about Garoppolo and some of these other guys who are young guys and what their future holds. This is Landry Jones' chance to make a ton of money. If he were to come out this week and maybe play a couple more games and look like a capable NFL quarterback, he could make himself a ton of money. Now, am I betting that's happening? No, probably not. But this is it. This is showtime for him in terms of making money for the next couple of years.
It's funny that you should say that, David, because I have a post going up in a little bit, and what it is it's a breakdown of Landry Jones' career pass attempts. I have a passing chart in there, you know, with all the red and blue and yellow dots that I've done in the past. I've charted all of that. I have it broken down by who he's targeted. I have it broken down by the stats by direction, by distance, and in kind of my recap here. This is what I have third to last paragraph right here. Sunday will be a big day for Jones when it comes to his NFL future, and especially being as it might very well wind up being his only real meaningful playing time for the rest of the season. At least we all hope that's the case. Win or lose, a solid showing Sunday against the Patriots will increase his market value, and that's important being as how he's scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent after the season is over. So, yes, there is a lot on the line, not only for the Steelers. I mean, obviously, you want to try to win the game, but and we don't know how long Roethlisberger's out, and we hope Roethlisberger's back against the Ravens, and we hope we never have to see Landry Jones again. So this very well could be his last, you know, audition against a team that nobody expects him to beat. And that's why I put in there win or lose, because if Landry doesn't turn the football over, if Landry completes 50% of his deep balls, if Landry converts 40% of his third down throws, not completion rates, but if he completes those into first downs and plays a near perfect game as to what would be best described as a near perfect game for him, win or lose, that's going to really do something for his market value. Now, obviously, the Steelers defense is going to have to play extremely well. I think they're going to have to hold the Patriots 20 points or less in order to win this thing, probably even a little bit less than that. But, you know, it's a daunting task, but Landry has to go into this game thinking, man, there's a few million dollars laying out here on the table right now.
Yeah, it's a big day for him. And we'll see with the rest of it. You know, who knows what kind of rapport he has with Eli Rogers. We've not seen that with Sammy. I mean, you figure he was throwing to Sammy on the scout team last year a fair bit. Probably some rapport there, but we'll see, Dave. And I, you know, it's frustrating for all of us to see that Miami game and see them play like that and expose the holes on defense, and then to you know, see the injury report and to just see how good that New England looks. And we're going to get to hear Ben here in a second, Ben Volen of the Boston Globe.
Let me ask you real quick. I want to test your memory here. They should stick out like a sore thumb to you, but we'll see. Can you kind of recap the five career interceptions of Landry Jones?
No, I wouldn't be able to get them all. I mean, I'm sure if you take me through them, I'll remember them, but I can't catalog them. He threw one in the playoff game, didn't he, against the Bengals? That was horrific.
Right, that you want to talk? Yeah, you're exactly right. Probably his worst, has to be his worst interception. Second worst, I would think, would be the one against the Chiefs, where the linebacker kind of dropped in coverage, and
in the middle of the field.
That one was really very, you know, kind of similar to the Bengals' interception. The other one against the Chiefs, I know you remember this one, the one that kind of just barely went over the top of the jumping linebacker's hands into the in and out of the arms of Antonio Brown, and then popped up 6 yards forward, and Eric Berry got it. Remember that one?
I do. The ball got tipped. Yeah, tipped. Yep, I do remember that one.
And it looked like even Antonio Brown, and Brown had it.
There was a question on that play that they, I don't know if they reviewed it, but I do remember that. Yep.
Right, and so you know, that one I don't so much put on Landry Jones. Let's see, the two, and then that leaves us two against the Seahawks. The one was on the fake punt, you know, a football that he knows good and damn well he should have never thrown across the field to Alejandro Villanueva, right? You remember that one, Jeremy Lane, yep. Getting that one. And the other one, David, was actually a 41-yard bomb down the right-hand side to Martavis Bryant in that game against the Seahawks, you know, with less than 2 minutes.
I remember that was a contested catch on the sideline. And it was, you know, it was a good defensive play. And the question was he in bounds? Did he have the ball?
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, the corner in coverage didn't even actually make the interception. The guy
safe,
right there. So, what am I trying to say here? I'm not apologizing for Landry Jones' 5 interceptions. Those things stay there. But realistically, I'm mostly disappointed in 2 of those interceptions that he had. His deep ball percentage, David, right now, I mean, we don't have a large sample size to work with, but believe it or not, he's 50% on his deep balls. I mean, you give me a 50% completion rate on 6 deep balls against the Patriots on Sunday, I'll take it. I'll take it right now. Sign me up. So, you know, he can throw the deep ball. Now, he does have a couple of interceptions on passes 15 yards or more. There's obviously concern about his third down play. There's obviously concern about his passes. I think people will see this in the post that I put up today. I'm most concerned about his passes 6 to 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. He's going to have to be a lot better in that area. And I hope people stop by Steelers Depot and read that post, because there's a lot of info in that breaking down all 60 or 61 pass attempts that Landry Jones has had so far during his career.
All right. Well, let's get to it then. We'll get to Ben Volen of the Boston Globe. Welcome back, and it's Wednesday, and as always, we like to get a beat writer with the opposing team, and of course, the Steelers and the Pats will get at it at 4:25 at Heinz Field on Sunday. And pleased to be joined by Ben Volen, one of the great beat writers in the country, now works for the Boston Globe covering the Pats. Was with us way back in 2013 on the Terrible Podcast. Ben, thanks for taking the time to be with us again.
Thanks for having me, David.
Ben, let's start out with Bill Belichick. He certainly fascinates me. I'm sure a lot of people in this area of Western Pennsylvania, that fascinates wouldn't be the word that they use. You get to interact with him on a regular basis. What are your impressions of Belichick?
Yeah, fascinates is a good way of putting it. Occasionally annoyed, because he makes life as a reporter unnecessarily difficult at times. But then many times he's, you know, the greatest coach in NFL history, arguably, and a football historian, and an X's and O's, you know, savant. So getting to listen to him during press conferences can be really, really fascinating, the word that we used before. You guys will like this in Pittsburgh on Wednesday during his morning press conference. He had a great answer about the tradition and the excellence of the Steelers and why they've been so successful for decade after decade, and talking about consistency they've had in the organization, both with coaching and with scheme and scouting. Belichick was going on and on about his respect for the Steelers today. So I know Steelers fans are not going to greet the Patriots too warmly on Sunday, but I would think Steelers fans being, you know, such fans of the history of the game and the tradition can respect what Bill Belichick has meant for the NFL.
So you do get to interact with him all the time, and I get to interact with Mike Tomlin a little less frequently, but one of the things that's a little bit frustrating for me about Mike Tomlin is he will very rarely talk X's and O's as if, you know, he's giving away the state secrets, strategy, formations, types of things that he likes to do, even in retrospect, looking back at things that that took place, he won't talk much about that. I've seen Belichick at a whiteboard drawing up plays, talking about schemes. Will he do that on a week-to-week basis with you?
Not with us, per se. Like everything with the Patriots, it's done through their website now. So he'll do a weekly video with the team, and he'll break down, if they win, he'll break down 4 or 5 key plays. And he makes sure not to do anything that would call out the opponent. He's simply singling out, you know, good blocks and good plays by his own team. So he's very careful about that, but he'll single out plays from the game. And if they lose, he'll look at the next week's opponent, because he doesn't want to talk about losses in his film breakdown. And so he would break down, you know, what makes the Steelers cover 3 scheme so effective or something like that. But yeah, he's a teacher at heart. His mother was a teacher. He grew up at the Naval Academy, where his father was a coach. They've dedicated this huge volume of football books to the library at Navy, and they've created the Steve Belichick, you know, football library there. Right. So he's a historian and a teacher, and, you know, he'll break down some of the plays from the game, and then he'll talk hypotheticals all day long, why the 2 tight ends is effective and all the things that can be created off of it. So Bill Belichick is, like I said, he's a fascinating guy to listen to, and when he gets into the football, you know, there's not much better than that.
And that's funny because Mike Tomlin hates to talk about hypotheticals. Ben, look, bit Tom Brady back now 2 weeks, 35 points for the Patriots. I'm just going over the all 22 this morning from the game this past weekend. It looks like typical Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels offense, the way they get the spacing, the precise route running. Looks like they're using the back a little bit more as a receiver out of the backfield, kind of a la Kevin Falk. And Mike Tomlin made reference to that on Tuesday. Have you noticed anything different at all, you know, from the 2016 Tom Brady Patriots versus the last two seasons? And where does this – I mean, it's still only 6 weeks in. You only have 2 weeks of film to look at with Brady. But where does this offense rank, you know, probably related to some of the previous year's Patriots offenses?
Yeah, I would say that you say it's a typical Patriots offense. It's arguably playing better now than it has in a long time. And Tom Brady at age 39, this four-game suspension, he won't admit it, but it was probably a blessing in disguise for him. It allowed him to stay healthy and, you know, go into week five completely healthy, and now you only have a 12-game regular season. And he stayed sharp during his absence, obviously. And, you know, the way he takes care of his body and works on his movement skills. I mean, he's moving around better now at 39 than he did at 29, the way he shuffles around the pocket and avoids pass rushers. And then just the weapons that he has. Gronkowski is still phenomenal. We've seen that the last 2 weeks as he's finally been unleashed from that hamstring injury. Adding Martellus Bennett, another big three-down, blocking, big receiver, athletic, all-around tight end. Having Gronk and Bennett in the offense at the same time just presents so many options for them out of the run game and the passing game and play action. And then you've got Edelman and newcomer Chris Hogan, who had a 100-yard game a couple weeks ago, and Danny Amendola, James White out of the backfield. They are so dynamic and so deep on offense. They could withstand injuries a lot better this year. Tom Brady is just at the top of his game mentally and physically. The offense has the potential, I think, to be the best possibly since 2007, and maybe even better, because the 2007 offense was kind of reliant on the default of Randy Moss. The Giants kind of exposed it in that Super Bowl when they got the rush on Tom Brady. And the Patriots now have so many different ways to beat you. They can tailor their game plan each week to feature a new guy to lead the offense. And if they can stay relatively healthy, they've got the makings of a pretty special offense here.
You talk about Brady avoiding the pass rush. I just timed that scramble of his this morning from that Bengals game. I think it was the first quarter, 11.81 seconds. That's got to be a record for Tom Brady. The outside zone, I noticed that they were running there. It seems like they're running that better than they ever have. With those offensive linemen, is this the most athletic offensive line they've had in a little while?
It's interesting. Nate Solder, the left tackle, is a very good athlete. They have smaller guys on the inside. Marcus Cannon is the new right tackle this year, playing for Vollmer. He's done a nice job. It goes back to that versatility. They have the versatility to run the zone offense, and they have the versatility to run the power running game with LeGarrette Blount as well. So they really can adapt to whatever they need to do each week to beat their opponent. They're the best game plan team in the NFL. And Belichick, you know, he craves guys on both sides of the ball that can play seven different roles. They don't have really any true pass rushers, but they have all these different guys that can rush the passer and drop off into coverage between Ninkovic and Chris Long and Jabal Sheard, Dante Hightower, Jamie Collins, all these guys who can play so many different roles. Safeties who play cornerback, safeties who play linebacker, offensive linemen that can do zone blocking and power blocking, tight ends who can do everything. I mean, the versatility is really the big thing that the Patriots aspire to collect on both sides of the ball. And that way, when they have an injury, they can just kind of adjust on the fly and plug someone else in. And you know, it doesn't ruin the whole game plan when injuries start to happen.
Ben, going back a little bit to Belichick and the philosophy of team building, the Patriots find guys, you know, we can go back to Mike Vrabel. You mentioned Randy Moss. LeGarrette Blount, Chris Hogan is a good example. Wes Welker was a perfect example. I mean, it's just the list seems endless. And I know not every guy works out. But seemingly Bill Belichick identifies guys who have skills and puts them in a role to be successful. Barkevious Mingo, another one, Jabal Sheard. What is it about, I don't know if reclamation projects is the right word, but what is it about the guys that he brings in that makes them successful? Is it because of the system and identifying their strengths? Do you think there's something specific to the Patriots culture? Is there something you can pinpoint?
Well, I think you mostly hit the nail on the head there. Just Belichick's ability to self-scout and to say what a player is good at and what he's not good at. And so we're only going to ask him to do the things that he can do, and we're not going to put him in a position where he can't succeed. Like you mentioned Barkevious Mingo. They traded for him, and he was a former top 10 pick, but they're not asking him to be a pass rusher and go after the passer 40 times a game. He's a backup linebacker. He's a core special teams contributor, and when he fills in for 10 or 15 snaps, he fills his lane and he does a nice job. So they don't ask him to do too much. And then, of course, I mean, having Tom Brady is such a cure-all. He raises and elevates the level of play of those around him. I mean, Chris Hogan was a very average receiver in Buffalo when Tyrod Taylor throwing him the ball, but you stick him in the Patriots offense with Tom Brady, and you're going to see his numbers take a significant spike this year. They're good at finding players that fit what they want to do. They've had some busts over the years. Their draft picks for a while, 2009, 2010, 2011, didn't work out so well. Adalius Thomas, they gave a huge contract to back in 07. He didn't really work out. But generally, they avoid the big splashy signings in free agency. They just look for guys that kind of fit into what they want to do. And then when you have Tom Brady running the offense, it certainly covers up a lot of your warts.
Yeah, I guess Jonathan Cooper would fit into that not working out situation as well. What are we going to see scheme-wise offensively? I mean, we know they can come out and throw it 50 times. They can come out and run it 50 times. They'll do whatever. Will they be a lot of – would it be mostly 12 personnel with two wideouts? Or is there a base formation for them?
No, there's not. But I think we're going to see – considering that the Steelers play a lot of zone defense and so do the Bengals last week. So I think we're going to see a similar offense in that. I think the tight ends and the running backs from the Patriots are going to have a big day, whether – I think LeGarrette Blount is going to get fed a lot, and then James White coming out of the backfield into the flats. The Dolphins were attacking the Steelers all day in the flats, and I just think James White had two touchdowns in that exact kind of scenario. The tight end runs a little clear out, takes a linebacker with him, and then James White wide open in the flat. And then, Gronkowski and Bennett down the seams, there are some big holes to be had in the zone defense sometimes there. You saw Gronk, he was catching the ball and just running free, just streaking down the field last week against the Bengals. And we've seen that a lot from him against the Steelers. He's had a couple three-touchdown games against the Steelers, 143 yards one game. Tom Brady has had a lot of success against the Steelers. He's 8-2 all time, 24 touchdowns, only three picks, averaging almost 300 yards a game. So Tom Brady has not been tripped up too often by the Steelers' defense. And considering he's got a full complement of weapons, like I said, the two tight ends, James White, and then Edelman and Hogan will be, I think, complementary roles. It's going to be tough for the Steelers to slow him down this week.
This past weekend, the Steelers were in Miami, and in addition to getting gored by the run, Ryan Tannehill, death by a thousand paper cuts, a real short, crisp passing game with them, got the ball out quickly. I know Tom Brady would love nothing more than to do the same if he has to, because we know he doesn't like to get knocked off his spot. We know he doesn't like to get hit. Is the best thing to do with Tom Brady? Because, look, I mean, he's not known as a deep passer. But do you almost have to dare Tom Brady to throw the football in the air more than, 17, 18 yards past the line of scrimmage? Is that the best way to beat him? I mean, Ben, you've covered out of division and in division when it comes to, or in division as far as with the Dolphins, I believe, and then in with the Patriots, obviously. What is the best way, if you're attacking the Patriots that you've seen over the years and specifically this year, how would you suggest attacking their offense?
It has to be done with the four guys up front. They have to get consistent pressure, win their one-on-one battles against the Patriots' offensive linemen, get in Tom Brady's face right away, knock him off his timing, knock him off his spot, hit him when he throws. The Giants did that in the Super Bowl twice. The Broncos destroyed Brady last year in the AFC Championship game, and it wasn't through blitzing. It's being able to drop 7 or 8 in the coverage and getting a lot of pressure with just the guys up front. I've noticed the Steelers only have 8 sacks this year. They're also not going to have Cam Hayward this week. And the Patriots will make that a lot more difficult because I do think you're going to see a lot of LeGarrette Blount without Cam Hayward. Obviously, the run defense suffers. You guys saw what the Dolphins did last week, so you'll see a lot of power running from the Patriots. And then they'll run a lot of play action down the middle to the tight ends, and that freezes the linebackers. It's going to be – it's a difficult challenge to do what I said there. But if they can get to Brady early, you know, get the pressure, especially up the middle, right in his face, that's the one way to kind of slow down the Patriots' offense.
Tom Brady's probably not even going to have to wash his jersey after this game. When you flip over to the defensive side of the football – you know, the stats will tell you one thing against the run, but I think the tape will tell you the other thing. The best way to attack this defense, in my opinion, is run right up the gut against them. Would you agree with that?
For the Steelers to have any chance, it's going to have to be behind Le'Veon Bell this week. He's a workhorse. He played, I think, 53 out of 55 snaps. Really stresses the defense, not only as a runner, what is he averaging, 5.5 yards a carry, but they line him up in the slot and he pulls your linebacker out of the box and puts him in some really awkward positions. And I asked Belichick about Le'Veon Bell on Wednesday morning, and Belichick was like, oh my God, I mean, just what an unbelievable player, and went on for 5 minutes about Le'Veon Bell and how good he's been. So I think the Steelers really would have to control the clock with him in the running game. And the Patriots defense has been really kind of hit and miss this year. They are second in points allowed, so it's been fantastic. But you look at the teams they've played, not too inspiring, the list of quarterbacks and offenses. You know, a lot of Clevelands and the Houston Texans and teams that don't really put up a ton of points. And the Buffalo Bills in Week 4 ran all over them. Shady McCoy, Tyrod Taylor had phenomenal game running the ball against the Patriots defense. So they've cleaned it up in a couple weeks. Dante Hightower's come back. He's the heart and soul of the defense, that middle linebacker. Just won AFC Defensive Player of the Week, 13 tackles and 1.5 sacks, including a safety. So they have him. Jamie Collins might be back from a hip injury. But the Patriots, they struggle on third down. They're in the bottom third of the league in third down defense. And red zone defense has given up a lot of touchdowns this year. So there are some holes to be found in the Patriots defense.
Yeah, you mentioned all these things, and I, just listening, everything you've said is spot on. And a lot of these things are things the Steelers don't do well, you know, get to the quarterback with their four. I mean, that's been a disaster all season long. Talking about the Patriots defense, is Jamie Collins the best player on that defense? Is Jamie Collins not a Pro Bowl player, an All-Pro player? Is he that level?
It's funny. Jamie Collins is the most talented player on defense. I don't think there's any question about that. He's just a sick athlete, a kid who – got to college as a safety, so he's got some good coverage skills, and then he just grew into his body and became a linebacker and then a pass rusher. So he's a guy who can, 6'3", get after the quarterback and cover the running back out of the backfield, chase him down sideline to sideline, has 2 interceptions this year. So there's no doubt that he's the most talented player. And as an upcoming free agent, I think he's going to get a massive contract somewhere, might not be New England. But he's not the most consistent player down to down. Like, he'll get beaten on a wheel route by the running back, or he'll be out of position one play. Dante Hightower is really the heart and soul of the defense, and he was a first-round pick back in 2012. Now in his fifth year, he's kind of like a descendant of Teddy Bruschi and Vrabel and Gerard Mayo, and now Hightower is like the leader of the defense, the big thumper in the middle. Like I said, 13 tackles and 1.5 sacks last week. Gets the guys lined up, where's the green dot, really solid, dependable player, and flies all over the field. So he's been banged up a little bit with a knee injury the last few weeks, and he came back last week and really had an excellent performance. And the defense is really a lot better when he's in the middle kind of patrolling things.
You know, you talked about what the Steelers need to do to win the game, and Mike doesn't often show his hand, but he did say yesterday, you know, we can't afford to get in a shootout with these guys. And obviously with Landry Jones, it's very different than with Ben. And you talk about the list of quarterbacks, and it's going to add to that list with Landry at quarterback. In the secondary, Malcolm Butler, obviously everybody knows who Malcolm Butler is now because of the Super Bowl Mike highlighted him as a guy who is a, you know, he really put him in the category with some of the better shutdown corners in the league. And the rest of the guys are now familiar with it. We're all familiar with Patrick Chung and McCourty and Logan Ryan. Is this a really solid group? Is this as good a secondary as they've had in a while?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, if not, they're not spectacular, but they're solid. They as they say here in New England, they do their job very well. Butler and Ryan have really formed a nice 1-2 combo at cornerback. Sometimes they match up on a receiver. Sometimes they just kind of pick sides and play some zone or just match up on whoever. I think we'll see some of that this week because the Steelers have so much speed at wide receiver. And the one thing that the Patriots really have to prepare for, the deep ball. Landry Jones can still chuck it deep, and Brown and Sammy Coates and those guys can still score a 75-yard touchdown on any play. And you got to be ready for the gadget plays, the end around, and some of that stuff, because I think they're going to have to get creative with Landry Jones. But, you know, they're really going to have to take away the deep ball, and I think you'll see that probably with a lot of the cover three that the Steelers play, and just make Landry Jones piece together these 10, 12, and 14-play drives. You know, that's usually Bill Belichick's MO with these young quarterbacks, just make them beat you from the pocket. But, yeah, with McCourty, he kind of moves all over the field now. They've got this kid, Daron Harmon, who's in his fourth year from Rutgers. He plays center field. Chung's been really solid as, like, that hybrid linebacker safety role. They found this kid, Eric Rowe. They traded from him. He was a second-round pick of the Eagles just last year. 6'1" cornerback. Made his debut last week, and they said, hey, kid, go cover A.J. Green. He did a pretty good job in the fourth quarter shutting him down. So they've got some decent depth there, and they have a lot of safeties and a lot of guys with versatility, and you know, they can play zone on one play and mix it up and go to man the next and cover two, cover three, cover one. Big surprise, but they have a lot of versatility back there.
Did you mention Alondon Roberts? I looked at it. I watched a little bit of tape on him pre-draft and really liked him out of University of Houston. What's his role in that defense right now? I haven't focused in on him when watching a few of these Patriots games. How's he progressing?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought him up because he's awesome to watch. He's a great little find by the Patriots. An undersized linebacker, kind of in the role of like London Fletcher. That's why he dropped to the sixth round in the draft out of Houston. But the kid is a speedy little missile all over the field, and he's gotten to play the last couple weeks with Collins and Hightower being banged up a little bit. And he's had 7 tackles in each game, and the force that this kid hits is unbelievable. If you go back and watch that Cleveland game, he smashes the you-know-what out of Joe Thomas and pushes him right back into the quarterback for a sack. It was, I mean, Joe Thomas has 7 inches and like 60 pounds on the guy, and he destroyed him. And then he did it last week. He hit Gio Bernard so hard that Roberts had to be checked for a concussion, and unfortunately he was okay. But the force with this kid hits with is unbelievable, and he might go back to more of a reserve role this week if Collins returns, but I think he's been playing well enough that they're going to have to find a way to get him on the field because the kid is just a missile from sideline to sideline and really packs a wallop when he hits you.
All right, Ben. I got to tell you, people in Pittsburgh, they were circling this game going into the Miami game and saying this is going to be great. Steelers are going to come in at 5-1. This will be for the, you know, who gets to host the AFC Championship game. The tone is very different in the last 72 hours, not only because of how they played in Miami with the injuries, with Ben out. I don't think there are many people with the history of the Pats coming into Pittsburgh and whooping the Steelers that think the Steelers are going to win this one. You've made it sound like you're kind of in that category as well, as am I, as I think Dave is. What do you got for Sunday?
Yeah, not to be a homer here, but I don't see how the Steelers are going to keep pace offensively or slow down Brady. And I mean, the past 2 times Brady's played them, 432 yards and 4 touchdowns, and then 288 yards and 4 touchdowns. Both those games were at Gillette, but so you know, maybe the road game in Heinz Field will slow down the offense a little bit. But you know, the Patriots have been scoring about 35 points a game here, so I'll stick with that, and maybe 35-17 again. I just don't see how Landry Jones is going to be able to keep up this week.
All right, man. Great stuff. I really appreciate you taking the time. That's great insight. Thanks so much for being with us, and look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Okay, good stuff from Ben, Dave. And, of course, people can follow him on Twitter at his name. It's at Ben, B-E-N, obviously, Volin, V-O-L-I-N. And remember, Steelers Nation mortgage rates are near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, refinance, or whatever else you can do with a home, contact our buddy Craig Oxham from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help you out if you're in the market. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or it's easy to apply online, blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399. Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. So, Dave, good breakdown of the Pats there. Clearly, they're going to come in here as a favorite team. I mean, Ben, the Vegas, with the Steelers' performance against Miami and Ben being out, Vegas has kind of moved this line about five or six points, depending on where you saw the opening line. It looks like the Pats are about a touchdown favorite in Pittsburgh. We've seen games where the Steelers will be, 7-point favorites, and they've struggled on some of those, and they were a 7-point favorite against the Dolphins. This is not a hopeless scenario, but for me, the question is, and I think you pointed this out earlier, can the Steelers put up 24 points, and are they able to keep the Pats, kind of under something close to that number to make this a close game? And it's going to be incumbent on the offense to hold the ball to keep the defense off the field. And I can't think anything other than they're going to have to make some splash plays. They're going to have to do some things on defense that are game changing. That you can't have game after game where you have no sacks and no turnovers. So they're going to have to get somehow, whatever it is, get some of those to have a chance in this one.
Yeah, I mean, you could go into every game and say need sacks, need turnovers. But we've seen them win before without sacks and turnovers. They're not going to win this game without any sacks or turnovers. And there's an S on the end of both those words, sacks and turnovers, because I think they're going to need at least two sacks, and I think they're going to need at least two turnovers in this game in order to win. And, oh, yeah, Tom Brady hasn't thrown an interception yet. He's going to go at – I mean – He's going to get in the huddle, David, I think, and flip a coin as to which cornerback he wants to. It's going to spin the bottle in there as far as he wants to go after maybe Artie Burns or Ross Cockrell. And we've seen so many times they rub they run these short rub routes and just off of that they'll run behind that run Rob Gronkowski on a wheel. Coming out of one of those, and just so many ways they can beat you, and it's just, I'm going to continue watching tape, and we'll break this thing a little bit down a little bit more on Friday. But I doubt our opinion, our optimism is going to change. And if there's ever a week that we want to be wrong, it's this one, because what a huge win this would be. All right, David, until Friday, folks can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. They can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. They can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. They can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do this for you 3 days a week during the season, and you want to donate to the show, we certainly would appreciate it. We got a couple of donations the last couple of days. Thank you very, very much to those people who did that. You can go to SteelersDepot.com and find the donate button in the upper right-hand navigational bar, and that'll take you to PayPal, where you can do it securely online. David, I don't know what else to say. Woohoo! Brady versus...
Get healthy.
Brady versus Landry Jones, and hope this team can get healthy. So get us out of here, and thanks again to Ben Volen for joining us today.
We're back at it on Friday. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.